insurance is boring, right? No, insurance is fascinating. It is contracts where you transfer risk to another entity for a little bit of money called a premium. It's really quite amazing. We could just hand our risk right off to other people. But how do you know if you're doing the right thing, if you've got enough, if you've got the right insurance? What about your home, your car? You back over some kid in the parking lot here that ran out in front of you. Or you turn loose of some piece of property, like, I don't know, a shopping cart, and it ran into somebody else and caused damage for them. Or what if your tenants burn the kitchen? If it's a kitchen fire, does it burn up or does it burn down? That's an insurance question. So what we're going to talk about today, Kevin has seen this play out over and over in his decades in the insurance industry, and it's just something you shouldn't just be passive about. If you're going to build wealth, you need to know what the game is with insurance. So Kevin is here with Moseleski Insurance. I hope you guys will give him a warm welcome. Kevin Jenkins.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. First, I want to say thank you for coming and joining me today for, as he said, the fascinating world of insurance. With the insurance for the investor, the Moseleski Agency has excelled. I want to give you a little history of myself and the agency before we get into the meat and potatoes of your bottom line and your peace of mind when it comes to your insurance product. So, my name is Kevin Jenkins. I'm a licensed insurance agent since 2004 in the state of Michigan. Over that time, I have since gone on and got licensed in 47 states. I chose not to get licensed in California, Hawaii, and Alaska, simply because I believe California is another country and it's on fire. Rental properties in Hawaii are usually $1 million, $2 million, and it's a very niche market. And, well, Alaska is self-explanatory. So I came to insurance by way of a sales background. My mom, since I was very little, had always said I was going to be a salesman. So I tried to do everything else other than be a salesman. And, of course, ended up doing exactly what mom thought I was going to do. Her joke always was that I should have been Knowles. And now I'll let in my little deep, dark secret. Besides the fact that Noel is the owner of the agency and my boss, he is also actually my uncle. So this is a family-run business. The agency was founded in 1979 in a backwards way, so to speak. Noel was a life insurance salesman for John Hancock. In fact, he was the top salesman in the country for many years. And that was, you know, following in our grand, you know, his dad's steps, my grandfather, who was also a bigwig for Hancock at the time. John Hancock had a property and casualty division that they had purchased, and Noel sold quite a bit of the property and casualty. When they started selling off that market, that's when he went off and started doing the property and casualty, and then also selling life insurance at the time. And then incorporated the agency in 1985, and, you know, we've been going strong ever since. We're located in Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan, which is just outside of Detroit. Don't hold that against us. I am actually a Buckeye fan. Noel's oldest worked at U of M as a doctor, and his youngest son went to Michigan State. So we've got the Big Ten covered when it comes to the schools. When I joined the agency, you did not have to have an insurance license. You could work as a solicitor and go ahead and, you know, answer insurance questions. They've since changed those laws that they do require you to be licensed. And do continuing education. So I am constantly renewing and learning new products and new niches in the market. Besides being a licensed insurance agent, I am a CISR Elite and a CIC, which I know those don't really mean much, but a Certified Insurance Service Representative with the Elite status, meaning I passed all my 9 classes on the first try, and the CIC is a Certified Insurance Consultant. It does allow me to compare your policy to another policy and offer an opinion on that. With that being said, I'll stop drowning on about, you know, myself and the agency, give you a little 2 pieces of personal information about myself, and then we're going to get into the insurance business. I am the father of 2. I have a 7-year-old and a 9-month-old, and they're at home with my wife of 12 years. So she's a saint just for putting up with me and putting up with my travels. So now what I want to really get into is how and what we do with insurance, and how we can state that we specialize in the investor and investment properties. So just like every business that was established, as the economy started to turn in 2006, 2007, right before the big crash, our agency worked mostly on home, auto, and some limited investment properties. But as the market changed and people couldn't get approved for a home mortgage, and then you had buyers going out and purchasing properties for, you know, some cases $100, $500, $1,000 in our general area, we switched and found market that would be able to afford appropriate coverage. You weren't going to be limited to just what you paid for the property, because at the time the market was so inexpensive, right? There was a lot of people that were worried about moral hazards, what was going to happen if they paid, you know, even $10,000 for a property that 5 years ago was a $100,000 unit. So we went out and began finding the appropriate coverages to make sure that you were covered, whether the property was occupied at the time that you purchased it, a turnkey rental, or if you were buying it and having to do the rehab. Very important when it comes to a renovation property that you have the appropriate coverages. You want to make sure that that policy is going to provide coverage for you and the amount of work that you're putting into it. Because a lot of times what could happen is you go out and you tell your agent, I bought a property. In fact, I had this yesterday during my lunch breakout. I had a gentleman tell me that he, when he buys a home, he just calls his agent and says, I bought this property. She doesn't ask him any information regarding the upgrades or anything to the home. And that, to me, would be, you know, a big concern about what may not be properly covered. Why wouldn't you, you know, say, okay, the roof is 15 years old, but I'm replacing it. So could you see where you could end up in a big dilemma if you have a 15, if you have a policy that will cover your roof on an actual cash value basis, and you're putting a brand new roof on there, rather than, you know, knowing that you have the appropriate coverage for that home. So communication is key when it comes to your insurance, and a rudimentary knowledge is what I hope to impart, you know, over our time here today. Because we get into a rut, right? How many people in here buy homes cash, may I ask? Okay, you're cash buyers. Have you ever forgotten to call your agent and say, hey, I'm buying a property? I get it all the time. You have? Yeah. I get it all the time. Oh, you know, I bought a property last week, and, you know, I didn't think about it because it's not a requirement for your closing. If you're getting a mortgage, of course, it's one of the mortgage requirements that you have a insurance policy in place at the time of close. So that's one of those items where insurance is not in the forefront of people's mind, but it, as my speaker or introducer stated, it is a transfer of risk. You know, take that, you know, you're taking a premium, and we'll use, I'm just going to use round numbers today because it's just going to be easier for all of us. It is still early. Let's just say you have an investment property that you paid $150,000 for, and you're going to put $50,000 in rehab in there. So the idea when you purchase that policy is you want to be restored to where you were prior to loss. And that's what insurance is there for. The root of insurance is actually in case, you know, in case something happens. And you want to know your protection. So may I ask, if you purchase a policy and you've paid $150,000 for it and you're going to put $50,000 in rehab, do you, you know, if you're not speaking to your agent and they just look up the sales price and insure the property for $150,000, let's say 3 months down the line you have a fire. You're covered for $150,000. Who's going to cover you for, say, the $30,000 that you've spent on the renovation already? And the answer is nobody. Okay? Most of the investors that I speak to, they started out with the idea it was that they're going to supplement their retirement because what are we getting? You know, we're getting under 1% in our bank accounts. Our stock market has been volatile. You know, obviously right now we're riding a great high. I get that. But we did have a crash in 2019. You really can't call it a crash because it didn't last for the two consecutive quarters. But you went from riding all-time highs to dropping the largest it had dropped since the Great Depression.
Correction.
Yes, ma'am. Market correction. Yeah. But if, you know, who here, by a show of hands, can honestly say $30,000 would not affect their bottom line? Right. No, exactly. $30,000 is going to affect everybody's bottom line. It's going to affect a retirement. And these are the items. So when it comes to a renovation policy, we offer products where you can insure the property for your purchase price, add in what you expect for your rehab, and that'll be your coverage amount. So if you paid $150,000 for the property, you're expecting $50,000, you can insure it to $200,000. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be paid out $200,000, okay? If you have completed $30,000 of the work at the time of loss, that's what they're going to reimburse. What you have at your purchase price, theoretically, if you have a full-time loss. Yes, ma'am.
What happens if the loss is in a couple of years and prices are higher than $250,000?
Well, you can absolutely insure it for a higher limit. This is
upping the insurance.
You always want to do that, but I'm speaking specifically about renovation policy at this time.
Okay.
You know, I do have, you know, a fair amount of time to get into to cover the particular items. And basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about renovation properties, coverage for vacant units, and then your rental units and the type of coverages that you can have in each one of these products. But as far as renovation right now, insurance is not meant for you to make money. That's a big key. It's meant to restore you to where you were prior to said loss. So with the renovation program, you go in, you can set it up, your purchase price plus your rehab amount, and make sure that you can be restored to where you were prior to the loss. That's a huge, huge item. You know, yes, the setback stinks and the paperwork that is involved with the city and if it's a total loss, demolishing the property and then selling the lot, those things all there. But having peace of mind that your bottom line will not be affected is the most important thing that you can have. It's that rudimentary knowledge of how your insurance is meant to work. You know, and when you go out and you purchase an insurance policy, you purchase it and forget about it. I mean, I'm an insurance agent, and come February of next year, I've been doing this for 19 years. And from front to back, I have read two insurance policies in that time. One was a commercial policy. It was 196 pages, and I had to read it front to back. And one was a homeowner's policy. Now, that's not to say I haven't read sections of the policies regarding coverages and exclusions to make sure that I'm offering the proper coverages and I understand what I'm selling. How many people in here understand that when you receive your insurance policy from your agent, legally, it is assumed you've read it?
Yeah.
It is legally assumed that you have read that policy. May I ask how many people in this room have actually read their insurance policy cover to cover? There's always one person. Now,
yes, and I found that the garage wasn't the unattached garage was not included.
Right. Now, let me ask this question, because this is always my follow-up question to that when I do have somebody who answers, yes, I have. Did you understand everything in that policy?
No.
Exactly. So a working relationship with your insurance agent can be a very enlightening process, and it helps educate you. You know, I love the OREAs, the REAs that we go to around the country, because I get to meet people at all phases. I've worked with people who don't even own a property. And then I've spoken to people with 500 to 10,000 doors. And there's a learning process that I, as an insurance agent, benefit from, you know, picking their brain and them asking me questions that, you know, help and benefit all of us. So, when it comes to purchasing that renovation project, there's some keys that you want to look at. Make sure that you find out the updates to the property if you don't have intentions of upgrading the mechanicals yourself, such as the electrical, the plumbing, your HVAC system, and whether it be, you know, a roof. Because those items could actually help keep your premiums down. You know, generally a system, like when someone calls in and you're gonna have your basic questions. Okay, what name are you buying the property in? And that's a big key as well. How many people in here have LLCs? Okay, vast majority of you own LLCs. And do you own those properties in the LLC?
Yes.
Okay. So the purpose of an LLC, obviously, without, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but is to limit the liability that, you know, someone could come after you for that benefit. It's what they're only able to go after what the LLC owns. So you want to make sure that when you buy an insurance policy, it's written in the correct name. Insurance follows the deed. So that's a key, because I do have people who say, hey, you know, I've got this property and I'm closing on it, but I'm going to close on it in my personal name, and then in a couple weeks I'm going to switch it over. Well, I'm not Johnny Carson, the great Karnak. I do not have the ability to know when you have done that. So make sure that you communicate to your agent when that has come. And I, again, this is something that I see regularly. I had a phone call yesterday from a gentleman from New York. I have a Airbnb 6-unit insured for him in Detroit. It's actually the second time I've insured the property for him under an LLC. And come to find out, the lawyer that he hired to file the quitclaim deed to put it into the LLC in 2018. Never filed the paperwork. So the insurance policy is written in an LLC that for all intents and purposes doesn't exist. It's, you know, on paper, it's there, but it was never quitclaim. So we have to switch the property over to the personal name. And then, of course, we're going to want to look at the liability limits, make sure, you know, he's got enough to protect himself. So, again, this is a knowledge item where you need to have an idea of how your properties are being set up, you know, for yourself. And when you do this, if you purchase it in your personal name, you're switching to LLC, it is 30-second to 1-minute phone call to an agent or a servicing center to make sure that the policy is written the correct way, or check your paperwork, make sure that you are properly covered. These are big items because an insurance company can and will, on some occasions, deny you coverage because this, you know, this company does not have what's called insurable interest. The LLC or, you know, the personal name does not have an insurable interest in the property. So they don't, you know, they're not going to benefit from it. Now, a lot of you, obviously, this being our third day, a lot of you guys have seen National Real Estate Insurance Group's booth and then the Noel Selesky Agency booth out there. So the difference being, they are the insurance company, and we are an agent that works with them. We do a lot of our renovation properties through their program, and it's a really nice setup. It allows you to put some of those properties that maybe a carrier such as Foremost or American Modern wouldn't necessarily cover. And it allows for some of those questionable mechanicals that are going to be upgraded to be insured right off the bat. Right now, the big thing in the industry is knob and tube wiring and aluminum wiring. Aluminum wiring is something that can be remediated. It can be, there's three different approved ways by the UL listings that will allow it to be ground and give you, you know, to where an insurance company will accept it. Knob and tube is becoming the hardest thing in the industry to insure since asbestos siding. It's something that is preventing purchases or involving changes in the actual purchase agreements, things of that sort. 2 weeks ago, I had a gentleman call me looking to buy a 48-unit building. Buying in a nicer area, but it's an older building. And he went into the building while he was doing his walkthrough, and he discovered Federal Pacific boxes in each one of the properties. Okay? Now, for those of you who don't know, Federal Pacific was a manufacturer of circuit breakers and electrical boxes, 50s through early 80s. And they basically were in the late 70s actually falsifying the effectiveness of the breakers that they were tripping. They had people that were intentionally tripping, make them think they were working. They were using wires while they were trying to do demonstrations. Eventually what happened is they went bankrupt. The CEO who authorized this went to prison. But unfortunately, at one time, they were one of the largest providers of the electrical circuits out there. So they do exist. This is one of those items where, unless he had a contract in place at the time of purchase with an electrician stating exactly that all of these boxes were going to be changed, would make the property uninsurable. Can you imagine spending $1.5 million and not being able to insure the property. And had he not called me, this is a cash purchase, he would have been sitting on a $1.5 million purchase with looking at instantly $40,000 that he wasn't expecting to spend. So the knowledge of what is in your homes is a big thing. When you do your walkthrough, I know people are looking for the major items. Oh, there's a hole in the wall, or, you know, I see water damage. But take a minute, make sure the electrical box is properly grounded, or you are aware of what type of plumbing is used for the service lines in your property. Because galvanized, copper, PVC, PEX, those can all help with your insurance if a carrier uses some of those items. Because with the National Real Estate Insurance Group program, for knob and tube or aluminum, while we can insure them, they have to be being replaced, or the aluminum wiring has to be properly remediated, okay, and it has to have an approved, you know, approval of that it is going to be, that it is properly done. So that's your part of the knowledge, your agent's part, you know, and those, we'll just, for this case, we'll assume that I am the agent that is servicing you. Make sure they're asking you the appropriate questions, that they are getting the correct information, because one 1,000 square foot home is not always going to be the same as another 1,000 square foot home. You could, you know, you could have a property built in 1945, or property built in 1935. The materials in pre-war as compared to wartime, or after, you know, shortly after the wartime, considerably different. Same to today. A replacement cost on a property built 40, 50, 60 years ago is going to be about 1.5 times of a property built in 2010, 2015. If, you know, a lot of you being experienced investors and going in and you're purchasing the properties that were, say, you know, built right after the war, say, we'll just go 48 to 60. If you take a look at the size of a 2x4 in a pre-war home, as to the size of a 2x4 in that home, it's going to be smaller. Pre-war 2x4s were actually 2x4. And afterwards, they were slightly smaller. Nowadays, they're 1 7/8 by 3 7/8. And they're usually, you know, they're going to be like a pine. Something that, you know, if you're relatively healthy, you could snap with a swift kick. You're not going to do that with an oak 2x4 or, you know, something made of a harder wood that was used. And believe it or not, with replacement cost, that will go in to what it would cost to rebuild your home. Because, you know, and I know I keep revisiting this statement, insurance is meant to restore you to where you were prior to a loss. So they're going to, you know, the finishes in a home will be better on an older home as compared to what they do now, unless they're going with what's called functional replacement costs. So we have two types of replacement costs. You have a true replacement cost, and then you have functional replacement costs. So with a functional replacement cost, they're going to rebuild the home with today's materials. And using today's materials, obviously, the construction is much different. You can, you know, if you go into a track development where it's going to be the same home over and over again, you see how fast something like that is built. My sister and brother-in-law in 2015 bought a home on the water in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. And it was your perfect 1987 Miami Vice mansion. Okay, it had the big square tiles going into your hardwood floors, and the, you know, when you looked up, the chandeliers were, you know, completely opulent for no reason. And they bought the property from some folks who it was their summer home. So they're in the process of remodeling it. My brother-in-law moved in there. My sister stayed in their house in Monroe. They're about an hour away from each other. In the process of doing the work on the home, they had a family member come in and do their hardwood floors. Licensed and insured company, and took out the tile, matched all the floors. Everything looks spectacular. Humans could walk on it after one day, but they say dogs shouldn't go on it for 3 days because dogs lay in it and they absorb it into their skin. Unfortunately, during this time, one of their furnaces failed. The blower locked up. Now, it was in the crawl space. So, burst into flames, and nobody's there to know. The way the houses are set up, Jefferson is the main drag. For those of you who like Clint Eastwood, if you've seen the movie Gran Torino, anybody here? So that stretch where the kid is driving at the end of the movie in the Torino, that is actually, down there it's called Lakeshore, but it is actually Jefferson Avenue. To give you an idea of where this actually is. And now let me get to the point of what we're talking about knowing what your insurance covers. I was their insurance agent. The furnace locked up. It caused 3-4 failure. So their kitchen floor, the basement floor above, the ceiling going into their attic. Luckily, it had a 18.5-foot ceiling, so it didn't burst out and catch more. Or 18.5-foot roof above the ceiling basis. I had written their policy with full replacement cost, a 25% extended replacement cost, and then put on the proper coverages that they would need to, you know, for the finishes on the property. Although the fire was contained to 20% of the home, because it went straight up, and luckily the neighbor noticed it after a few hours, and the whole house didn't burn to the ground or cause, you know, further damage. By the time all was said and done, they actually had to tear the house all the way down to the foundation, because smoke damage was so much that it would have cost more to actually try and clean the property and then just fix the area than it was to rebuild the home. So, obviously, this is my sister, and I viewed the home, so I was able to do that. But can you imagine if I had just said, okay, here's the replacement cost on your property? The rebuild, because they did a few extra things, ended up costing them pretty much close to $900,000. They were insured for $625,000, but had the extended replacement cost endorsement on there, which covered what they did, and then went in and did, you know, brought them there. Had to do builder's risk policy because it was a ground up construction and all these items, but we were able to take them all the way through and then actually moved them with the carrier we're with. We ended up terminating the relationship, and they went over to a friend of ours who was also an agent with that carrier to take it. But they were covered all the way through. They got to keep their homeowner's policy. I put a builder's risk policy on the property to make sure that they had coverage during the construction. So that's where the communication portion comes in. You make sure that you speak to either your agent or your servicer. And I would always say, make sure they're asking you the appropriate questions. Make sure you are asking the appropriate questions. So the next item on my list is I wanted to go into vacant insurance. Whereas it's not a renovation property, it's a property that's just either sitting vacant waiting for sale or waiting to be rented. Because those are going to be items that definitely could impact how you are covered. With a vacant unit, this assumes nobody's there, there's no property there, you're waiting, you know, waiting to put somebody into the unit. That's an item where you want to raise that coverage, because let's presume you finished your renovation now, okay? And you were covered at $200,000, but the market value now equates that the property is $230,000. You can raise the coverage on the home so that you're properly covered. You can, you know, let your agent again know, hey, I don't have contractors going there every day, you know, things of this sort. This is how it's secured. And then when you put a tenant in the property, that's when you want to make sure you've got it switched over to being tenant occupied. Your rate is going to go down with each one of these. That's a key. And the coverages that can be afforded to you are going to change. Now, one of the things that I really like about my REI Insure Pro program, which is the platform we use through National Real Estate Insurance Group, is the coverages that we can afford within that program, whether it be a renovation, a vacant, or a occupied rental unit, 1 to 20 doors, I can offer you special form coverages rather than just the basic. Now, I am a licensed Foremost agent, also licensed with American Modern, Vacant Express. And what you will find if you're using those individual companies, all A-rated, spectacular, their vacant and renovation policies only offer you the basic form coverages. Okay? Now, basic is going to be fire, wind and hail, lightning, vandalism and malicious mischief, acts of riot, civil unrest, collision from aircraft or vehicles, smoke damage, and on some policies there is sinkhole collapse. However, on many of them it is an exclusion. Special form will include all of those. It's also going to include coverage for weight of ice and snow, falling objects not related to a storm. Okay, so a tree that is in your backyard that is dead and it just falls because it's an old tree is not going to be covered. Now, obviously, if it's knocked down in a windstorm or something of that sort, you would receive coverage under wind. But with the having the falling object coverage in there, that's an extended coverage. We can also offer limited theft coverage. Both vandalism and theft are going to be limited to $30,000 in coverage. But if somebody breaks into your property and they steal permanently attached items, say your cabinets, your furnace, your hot water heater, items that are attached to the property and that are there for it to run, you can receive reimbursement. That program allows us to set you up under one policy. You can use multiple LLCs. You know, you can set it up on your personal name if you'd like. And then if you buy, you know, I have quite a few people who, for every property they purchase, they establish a new LLC because they don't want to lose a property should they have the issue, you know, an issue with another location. And you can set that policy up and have coverage, and it'll say owner 123 LLC or owner 345 LLC. And offering the special coverage on your vacants or your renovations is a big add to you at not a lot of extra money. Those are items that I like to do. You get the chance to do, you know, $2,500, $5,000, or even a $10,000 deductible. I don't get many people who ask for that one. pardon me. When you get into your rentals, this is where it, you know, the onus is on yourself and the tenant, right? Because you now have a contract and a party to party question of, you know, what is covered or what might you not be covered for because of the fact that you know, don't exactly know. So, by a show of hands, how many people believe that your tenants never lie on an application? Okay, so I think I'm at 10 for 10 right now with that question. Nobody has ever said a tenant is 100% truthful. Has anyone in here had a tenant sign a lease stating that there will be no pets, and then a few months later you find a dog in the house? Oh yeah, all the time. I had a
Yeah,
because you're going to charge them a pet fee, right? Because, you know, the more you can get for your property, the better. You're going to charge them a pet fee because I'm going to have to clean when you go out or, you know, different things. Yeah, on mild cases. Like, me personally, I had a bulldog that actually ate the corner bead out of a wall when he was teething. It was, I pretty much got, you know, beat up by my wife after that, telling me she never wanted another dog, although she loved that dog. But with your insurance, you want to know what you're covered for. A lot of companies will specifically exclude coverages for certain types of breeds. Okay? Now, pit bulls, Rottweilers, Presnell Canarios, Wolf hybrids, German Shepherds, Dobermans, Bull Mastiffs, Boxers, and St. Bernards.
Could you please add Chihuahuas?
Fun fact, Chihuahuas bite more people than anybody,
yes.
anybody or any type of breed combined. But because they're so small, they don't do any damage. People don't turn it in. But you ask with, like, the dogs that I just named off, what do they all have in common? It's they're big, but it's their bite pressure. The largest dog bite claim in the United States was caused by a St. Bernard. It wasn't an aggressive item. St. Bernards, by nature, the inherent nature, are trained to save people. Okay? That's the reason why German Shepherds are on the list, because they're trained as military dogs. But this St. Bernard in question, mother was working in a garden, and the baby was on a blanket. Baby was crying. St. Bernard reacted by just going to bring the baby to the mother. Picked it up by its skull. Crushed its skull. And the St. Bernard was the neighbor's dog. By all accounts, friendly, everything. The baby lived. Permanent brain damage. All of those items. So it was, you know, a terrible event. Now, you fast forward, this prompts St. Bernard's being added to those lists. Obviously, we all know that what people are saying, I know he's a pit bull, but he's friendly. They're always friendly until they're not, right? And the most reports that you hear about dog bites is it's the dog attacking the owner, right? Because, well, when it comes to deaths for pit bulls, it's the dog attacks the owner most of the time. But we've had, you know, when you have someone in the property, obviously you want to know that they have a pet, but what type of pet is it? You know, do you have exclusions in your lease stating that, you know, you don't authorize them to have this? Or are you asking, is the, you know, does the dog have a bite history, or is it aggressive? And those are, you know, additional things that can help you with your insurance. Yes, ma'am.
Are there any coverages for those dogs that are on the exclusion list?
Well, that's, again, another reason why I really like the REP program. They do not exclude animals. They do put a sublimit on their liability. So the policy comes with a $1 million liability limit. But they will put, they have a $50,000 canine limit. So if it comes, they don't exclude it. As I said, I'm a licensed foremost agent, American Modern, J.H. Ferguson. They all have exclusions on those animals, and there is no coverage. They specifically state that they don't cover for these particular breeds. So
something that looks similar to the breed, but actually isn't.
Well, you can. What you can always do is you can get the vet report saying it is. You know, but the insurance companies also put in a statement or a mix of any of these breeds.
Now, this is an Italian King Corso.
Okay, King Corsos are, you know, they're going to be usually on the list because they're so big. You know, just like a, what's the other one? Great Danes. Great Danes are huge dogs, but they're not known to be aggressive.
So if I sell someone a property and they have one of those dogs, they're going to have troubles getting homeowners insurance?
Well, it's their own dog. Okay. Remember, I am speaking about an investment situation. They may end up having to sign an exclusion that the insurance company will not cover, you know, cover for that animal. I do have homeowners companies that will not cover for certain, you know, for those dog breeds. They won't offer liability, or they'll say you can sign with an animal liability exclusion. So you'll still have your liability coverages in case somebody slips and falls on the property, attempts to sue, things of that sort. But they're not going to afford any coverage for a injury arising from the canine.
So now if I'm selling this property, like it starts out as a lease option, do I have a type of insurance to protect it and then they have homeowner's insurance, or you can't have it?
Well, when you do a lease option, you're still insuring the property. You know, they don't need to get anything other than their contents policy. And they're, you know, if they get a contents policy that's going to provide liability for the dog to add an extra layer. Because, you know, your policy may exclude that coverage. Now, once you've gone in and executed the lease option, they would have homeowner's insurance, and then, you know, you're not legally liable for what they do in the property because they're now essentially paying you like a mortgage. So that's the situation. Yes, ma'am, you had a question?
Yes, yeah, so I'm the owner, and I'm renting the property, and they have a big dog on there.
Mm-hmm.
What's my... their dog attacks somebody. How am I involved?
Well, so in our country... As you may well know, you can sue for anything, okay? Now, I'd love to say people only sue because it's right, but that isn't the case, right? People sue for money. You know, we heard of, you know, the things in the news where, you know, unfortunately this person was killed or whatever the case is. He, you know... did this, that, or the other, and had no involvement with his family, but his family sued afterwards because, you know, they want to get the money. So you could be named in what's called, what's referred to as a shotgun lawsuit. I'm sure there's a, you know, another name, but they will just, you know, they'll shoot to see what sticks. You can protect yourself by asking the questions that I'm discussing for your insurance. You know, is it, you know, is this dog aggressive? Or, you know, does this dog have a bite history? Is it current on its shots? All of these items, those are all layers that can help protect you. But unfortunately, you know, yes, you could be named in a lawsuit.
I do or do not know they have that dog.
Whether you do or do not, you have a duty to respond. You know, if a lawyer sends out a letter stating that somebody was injured on my, you know, injured at your location, they're going to send it out to whatever parties are involved, right? So, you know, say it was a neighborhood kid playing and he runs by the house, the dog hops the fence and, you know, bites him on the bottom or whatever the case is, or, you know, God forbid it's worse than that. A lawyer is they're not discriminant, right? They're not going to say it only goes to this person. They're going to look up the information on the house, and it's going to say this is owned by Jane Doe and rented by John Doe, and you know that's how they do that. I mean, you know, as I said, my office is based in Michigan, and we have giant billboards everywhere. In fact, the sides of the buses, there's a woman named Jumana. It says, injured in an accident? Call me. We've got Sam Bernstein. And then Call Lee Free is another one. And right now, the new hotshot is a guy named Mike Morris. And obviously, everybody's heard of Jeffrey Figer, you know, because he represented Dr. Def during all of that, right? But they're constantly advertising for something of that sort. I get maybe 2 or 3 times a year, I'll get a letter that is sent to one of my landlord buyers, or, you know, that's bought a policy for me, and they forward it to me. And that's exactly what the purpose is for. Send it to me. I inform the insurance company. It does not mean that you are being sued. It's, you know, I have a duty to report. You have a duty to report. You are aware of a situation. I make you aware of said situation. So going on into the renovation items, or pardon me. You had a question, ma'am? Yes.
Is having a renter's insurance can help in this situation at all?
Absolutely, it can help. It can help.
Can you explain how?
Well, of course. So renter's insurance is a form of a homeowner's product that is designed for the tenant. How many people in here, by a show of hands, require their tenants to have renter's insurance on their lease? Okay. Does anybody have a section in their lease stating that you recommend they get renter's insurance? Okay. And you have them initial it at the time of lease and everything? All right. That's a great form of protection. Because for those of you that require that they have the renter's insurance, they have to provide it to you to be able to move into the home. Now, what's the drawback of that, of the renter's insurance, is that you cannot be named on it as an additional insured. So if it cancels, you don't know. If you have a tenant that's renewing their lease, they've been in there more than 1 year, do you remember to get a copy of it? Exactly.
So I always ask them to add me as a beneficiary,
okay,
so that I can be notified if it is canceled.
Yeah, most insurance companies won't add you as a beneficiary, as an additional insured on the policy, because you do not have what's called insurable interest. With the homeowner's product, yes, I'll get to your question next. With the renter's insurance, which again, as I said, is a homeowner's product, that provides coverage for their personal belongings, and it also provides them personal liability. Because a renter's policy is going to provide premises liability to you. Something happens on, you know, an injury arises from the property, you know, and, or occurs on the property. So that's where having that policy and the HO coverage is going to provide that for you. Yes, ma'am. Oh, okay. Yes.
Can you just go, what's the difference between additional insurance and loss payee?
Okay, so the additional insured, it actually provides additional coverage to you. So if I have, let's say your contents policy has a $500,000 liability limit on it, and you're an additional insured, like in on a policy, that liability can be extended to you. So if you're named in the lawsuit, and you do find a company that will add you as an additional insured on the policy, then the liability can be, you know, their liability coverage can be extended to you, so it doesn't cost you any money. That's one of the reasons why most contents companies will not add you on the policy.
So does that mean if a place burns down, your name doesn't check?
Well, loss payee. Okay, so for a loss payee, that is who would be paid on there. You know, your loss payee is how you are named on the check. Typically, when it comes to a renter's policy, let's see, the dwelling and fire coverage on your home, right? Policy is going to be in your name. You don't, you know, you're not naming somebody else in there unless you have a mortgage, because you have to list the mortgage company. So it, when the check's cut, it would be cut in your name and the mortgage company's name. But adding someone as an additional insured affords them coverages under the policy for the liability, and then lost PE affords the ability for that is who would be paid out in case of a loss.
So you actually want to be
paid? If you can, yeah. I mean, it does not hurt anything. You know, obviously you're not going to be, on a contents policy, you're not going to be named as a lost PE because you can't be paid out on their personal belongings.
I was thinking in, like, the land contract and the buyer buys their own insurance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, at that point, make sure, you know, you would list yourself as a, you know, whether it be your LLC or your personal name, you would list yourself as the mortgagee or land contract, you know, because then you're going to be listed on the policy as well. But you can always request that you're listed as an additional insured and lost PE. Yes?
So my name is Norma Richards. I called you.
Hi, Norma.
Hi. So I was trying to. I think you were on vacation.
Yes, ma'am. I was in Florida. Yeah.
Yeah. I called you back after that, but I told you I couldn't talk to you.
Yes, ma'am.
But anyway, I was calling about insuring a property in Portland.
Yes, ma'am.
And it is a short-term rental.
Okay.
And so I read that you do Foremost and the National
Real Estate. Yep, the National Real Estate Insurance Group. We can do short-term rental there. We can do it with Foremost.
Okay. So I still need coverage.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to introduce myself.
Well, absolutely. It's a pleasure to meet you. I will be at the table right afterwards, and I'll be happy to take the information and help you with that.
I have a question.
Yes.
So when you're talking about insuring different properties, say, for example, you got 10, is there a specific, like, an insurance umbrella policy that could cover all of them? You have to have one for each individual, be insured individually.
Okay. Just so everybody hears the question. He was asking, can we insure multiple locations on one policy? And he referred to it as an umbrella, or as compared to insuring on individual policies. So with that, yes, I have monthly reporting policies that we can insure the property on, where you can put as many locations as you want, 1, 10,000, doesn't matter. You can do that. My limitation would be up to 20 doors on that policy. Otherwise, then we would be doing individual policies or a blanket policy. Okay. I'm glad that you stated umbrella, because an umbrella is completely different, and what it is the most misused term in insurance. Okay, and the example I like to use is, how many people keep an umbrella in their car? Okay, how many people have been trapped inside a store or out doing something and the umbrella's in the car? Does you no good unless you have the underlying limits. Okay, so umbrella coverage is above and beyond what you already have. And then you could have, the key is you want to make sure you have the appropriate coverages all the way through. So if your underlying liability requirement is $500,000, you want to make sure all of your properties have a minimum $500,000 liability, and then you buy your $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million umbrella, whatever the number, to cover above and beyond that. Now, that's not covering additional property. That is additional liability only, in case you're going to get sued. You know, so if you're doing an individual LLC for each location, that's something you could probably, you know, if you look at your numbers and think, all right, I can do $1 million liability, and that'll be great on that one. That would be more so a commercial umbrella, because a personal umbrella, which is, oh, I'm sorry, let me look here.
Nathan.
Okay, so Nathan buys a personal umbrella policy. That is going to be in his name, and then it is going to be for his personal residence and rental locations or secondary residences up to a total of 100 doors, no more than 24 rental locations. So you got your house and say 24, and those can be 1 to 4 family units. You can write the personal umbrella in his name, and then you could add your LLCs as an additional insured on the policy should you choose to. That way, the liability is going to extend to the LLC. The more properties you have, the higher umbrella I recommend you get. You know, I mean, if you're doing 24 properties, I would recommend, you know, at least minimum $3 million. Yes, sir?
Yeah, say if the tenants didn't have to insure, you know, while they're in there, mm-hmm. their belongings. If you got an umbrella policy in place, will that cover the exposure? If they don't have a policy,
well,
the umbrella.
No, an umbrella only covers you. That's just additional liability. That's additional liability for you. Okay. Now, one of the items that we offer, and it is actually another one of the programs that we have through the REI Insure program, is our Tenant Protector Plan. Now, the Tenant Protector Plan is a unique program. Pardon me. It is a unique program in the fact that it is purchased by you. The expense can be passed on to the tenant should you choose to. And what it does is it affords limited contents coverage to the tenant up to $10,000. And then it provides a liability limit to yourself of the choice. It's your choice of 50, 60, or 100,000. 50 is pretty much off the table anymore, unless you have, you know, it, you get the special request to do it. But you have $60,000 or $100,000 in liability that's afforded. And what that is let's say the tenant causes one of these covered peril losses, a fire, explosion. Now, vandalism, and it cannot be intentionally done by the tenant. So if somebody comes over and vandalizes the house, it's not the tenant. Smoke damage, sewer and drain backup, which is like it's a really nice throw-in coverage. And you have that liability limit. You can make a claim against that liability, and as liability has no deductible, you save on having the coverage. It's called first dollar coverage. So you go out, you buy your standard dwelling and fire coverage, or you use a platform program, and you already have the coverage. If a fire occurs, and say it's electrical fire, you're going to have a deductible. And we'll use $2,500 as your deductible amount. We'll use $30,000 as the number of the damage. You're automatically, the most you're going to get paid out is $27,500 because you have a deductible. And they take it out of that deductible limit, or out of the loss. So $27,500 would be the most you get paid out. But if the tenant caused one of these items, then you make a claim against the liability, and you can be reimbursed the whole $30,000. It's a nice coverage. There's also a little throw-in coverage there where if a tenant skips out on you or you have to evict them, you can recoup up to $1,000 in lost funds. And the price for the $100,000 is $14 a door per month. So it's a nice one. I have quite a few people who like to buy it, and then they pass the, you know, the expense on. They put in their lease and say, we buy this.
Could you use that instead of renters? Like,
yes, ma'am.
This is what I was thinking, because I was like, this is something I have more control over.
Yeah, absolutely, and that was one of the reasons that it was developed. Okay,
yeah.
So they developed it for the purpose that you're not going to be named. There are a few companies out there that would name someone on a contents policy as an additional insured. It's usually a very, very small company that says, okay, we'll do that. But most of the companies don't. So you don't know. Now, you can purchase this, and even if the tenant has a contents policy in place, with this you have a guarantee that they're going to have coverage. You're not going to be sued by the tenant, although your lease agreement already excludes you from it, but they're still going to try. You know, and you can't go a week without hearing about a fire in apartments or a fire at a single-family home, and the person being interviewed goes, "We lost everything. We didn't have no insurance." You know, and it's a shame because they're affordable, but it's because people aren't educated. Yes, ma'am.
And that helps with their goals.
Yes, ma'am. Yep.
Well,
this is called the Tenant Protector Plan, and it's referred to as TPP. Yeah.
Do you have a grocery extra
motion? Oh, I do. I have them at the table right across from the back door there. Yep. We'll be able to get that out to you for sure.
You need questions. Last night I overheard somebody who has an investment property, but the renter committed suicide.
Yeah.
This guy had to pay $30,000 to get all that cleaned up or anything. Mm-hmm. Is this part of the plan, or you guys have
to? It would not cover any of that, I'm sure. Suicide, you know, death, things of that sort. Insurance does still have to have a covered peril to cause the loss. Police activity is not covered. Death is not covered. Being in Detroit, I've heard a lot of different horror stories. My personal favorite probably was, I think it was like 2005, 2006. I received a phone call from a frantic mother basically saying that she needed to use her additional living expense to get the babies out of the house because their daddy robbed a gas station and the police killed him in the basement. I'm like, alright, first off, as a human, I felt horrible. But as an insurance agent, you know, I had to say, here are your coverages. That is not a covered peril. So we've had several instances of suicides. The other big one is meth cleanup, environmental cleanup. This story was probably 2018. I was not the agent, but it was all over the Channel 7 news or ABC news regarding a family that bought a home, a bank foreclosure. You know, had a baby that started getting sick. So they go to the hospital, the baby is tested, and the parents are arrested. So they're flipping out, you know, why are we being arrested? What's going on? They're like, you know, and of course, turns out they were being arrested for child abuse because you go to hospital anytime that drugs are found in a child. It has to be reported to CPS, and they found out that the home that they bought from the bank was foreclosed because the people that were living in the home had been running a meth lab and had been arrested by the police. So, and it stays, you know, and it's not an easy one to get rid of. You know, so that's one of those ones you want to make sure on your inspections. Yes, ma'am?
Completely naive question, but what's involved with the meth?
So, well, I have from we were at an event in Indiana, and there was actually a company that sells testing kits. Like, their entire business is based on helping investors determine if a property that they're purchasing is, you know, has been exposed to any sort of methamphetamine. Now, what he explained to me, and this is only a rudimentary explanation as I understand it, is the way that the floors have to be cleaned, they have to use like a deep pressure cleaner. Drywall, a lot of times, is just removed and replaced because it's cheaper than what the cleaning process is. I only have a rudimentary understanding. You know,
methamphetamine,
meth, like, you know, when you see people with scabs all over their face, it's the one that they make, that people can make in a gas station parking lot.
Make that into
Sudafed. Yeah, that, you know, that's. Yeah, you can't show your drug. You have to go to the pharmacy counter and show your driver's license to buy it.
And you can only buy so much in a certain time period.
Yeah, it, yeah.
So you can have a
whole other one. No. If they
only use one room, that one room might
be
the only one that you have to replace everything. How do you know this?
I mean,
well,
it's just that the testing would be very expensive.
So
there is no policy to cover either one of
those. No, that's one of those items where insurance has, you know, the perils that I'm discussing as far as the coverages. You wouldn't be, you know, covered for that. Now, let's use explosion as a coverage. The one thing that I do understand about meth, I've never touched it, never even seen it, but I will tell you this, it is highly explosive, highly volatile. When you're talking about, you know, a armchair chemist playing with battery acid and, you know, items, and they have to release pressure and do things in a, you know, wrong.
Ammonia, kerosene, or gasoline.
Yeah, all kinds of things. I have actually insured a property that did blow up from a, you know, meth use. Now, explosion and fire are covered perils. So that was covered.
Even though it was the tenant that did it.
Well, it was the tenant that did it. They don't exclude intentional acts done by a tenant when they discuss that. Like, let's say somebody that you're entered into a contract with, that's who's excluded on policies. Like, you know, when you sign a lease agreement, you know, you're not going to get covered from vandalism from a tenant because you've signed a lease. And that's a written contract. That's a contract. They look at written, verbal, and implied. So, but obviously that person didn't intend to blow themselves up, you know. And if the person goes to, let's say you go and you serve an eviction, and then that person decides they're going to blow out you're going to blow out the pilots, leave the gas on, and blow your house up. That would be covered, you know. That isn't a intentional. Well, it could be considered vandalism. The root loss is going to be explosion and fire. So those will be covered perils that, you know, can protect you. When we go back, you know, when we talk about the tenant protector plan and the perils themselves, the other one that I really like to focus on for that $14 a month per door, you can receive that reimbursement up to $1,000 for somebody who skips out on your lease, but also if you have to evict them. And one of my clients had a... Yes, sir?
I know you have brochures here, sir.
They're actually on the table right outside the door. I apologize. Yeah. We didn't even think to bring them in. But our table is actually right across from there. Noel can help grab them. But one of my clients who has all his properties in LLCs, the thing, you know, his argument is he really would like to put them back in his name because he can't file eviction papers in court. He's got to hire a lawyer to do it, right? Then I have somebody who keeps everything in his personal name, and he doesn't argue it. He's like, I don't care. He's like, what are they going to sue me for? And he's like, here you go. But this does not require that you have the eviction completed. It is that it has been filed. So you can, you know, you can either have the lawyer file or you file it yourself and it's waiting to be processed. You can start the process to receive. You do actually have to have the person out before you would, get your $1,000 back. But it's a heck of a lot better than not getting anything. You know. Yes, ma'am.
$1,000 for lost rent, or damages, or both?
It would be for loss of rents or for eviction purposes. So, you know,
loss of eviction.
Yeah. Yep. You can recoup on that. The $100,000 liability limit is $14 a month per door. So if you had a duplex, it'd be 28, you know, so on and so forth. And that's another little item that they offer here on four family units. Or a two-family. Let's say the fire is contained to one side, but there is smoke damage to the other. They do offer a sub-limit of $2,500 that they can afford to the other tenant for damage to their personal belongings, you know, from smoke or, you know, possibly even the fire jumping over. Yeah. Okay. Yes, ma'am?
Is there any issue then if you use that? Are your rates going to go over?
No, ma'am. Well, that's the great thing about this particular... Okay. About this particular program is the fact that you are not actually buying an insurance policy, okay? The policies are built by the company, and they're held by the company. You are then added as an additional insured to the policy. So in an example, you receive an account number, and we'll just say your account number 100,000, okay? And the setup on that then is those rates are steady, because we could have 400 properties right over in Loveland, okay, 1,000 in Columbus, and then it's offset by, you know, 5,000 in Iowa, where you're, you know, what is your real concern except for locust every 18 years, right? That's how they help keep the rate steady. The rate is not specifically based on you. Now, what program your house could be put on is going to be based on the items that I was discussing, those age of the mechanicals or things of that sort, because they, you know, they only have certain policies that will cover certain items. Okay, and then you had a question, and Norma, I'll get to you next.
If we get this policy, mm-hmm. Do we still require tenants to get a renter's insurance?
I would absolutely recommend that you do that, but you could purchase this separately.
So I used to just recommend it, but I really started enforcing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still recommend to basically enforce it?
I would always recommend that, yes, because that's an added level of protection. Now, this gives you a benefit. If they let their policy lapse, then you're giving them some limited coverages. Now, if they have a contents policy, I don't think that you could pass these pricing on. Again, that's more of a legal question, but I do have plenty of people who purchase this, and they take and they just say, okay, I'm purchasing this in your benefit, and it's going to cost X amount of dollars per month. Or some people don't even do that. They don't charge it at all, and they just figure it as a part of doing their business. Yeah, you know, by $14. Okay, Norma? Okay. Yes.
I got a question.
Yes, Nathan.
You brought up a good point about claims.
Mm-hmm.
Say, for example, I have 10 properties and I have all these insurance.
Mm-hmm.
To what limit does the insurance company have? Obviously, different claims within 5 years. Mm-hmm. You guys look at, all right, the types of claims or whatever before you consider either jacking them up or cutting me off completely. If there's been several claims, and if there are, how many claims is it you guys look at?
Okay, so I'll take that as a two-part question for you. And for those of you who didn't hear it, his question was, with claims, say he has 10 locations, and with those 10 locations, he has multiple claims within a 5-year period, because he said a few years or 5 years. So we'll use a 5-year period. Now, going to a standard market, carriers such as Foremost, American Modern, these are companies that are going to be licensed and domiciled to do business in those states rather than a surplus lines carrier. Surplus lines carrier is a company that is not particularly licensed in that state, but they are authorized to do business based on the basis of their program, such as the NREG program, which is backed by, say, Lloyd's of London or Assurin or different programs of that. So the first part, standard carriers, Foremost, American Modern, Vacant Express, they will look at the number of claims. Foremost specifically, if you have a fire and it's more than $10,000, Anytime you go to get a new policy, they need a copy of the fire report. Okay? And that is, no matter if you filed it once or, you know, 100 times, you have to do it within the 5 years. If it's over $10,000 for a fire loss, and that's at any address that you won't. They will take 3 claims within a 5-year period. After that, they, depending on the type of claim, you could get up to 5. You know, if it was a weather-related situation, you know, heavy windstorms, things of that sort. But a fire is going to be rated higher than, say, a wind-related situation. And then they do, you know, obviously rates do get surcharged with your standard carrier. When we get into a policy such as the National Real Estate Insurance Program, there is not a particular number of, you know, claims that they have a cutoff or experience rate. Yes, we do have to disclose if you've had claims. They will ask, you know, for a brief explanation of what that was. But it is, that rate is pre-negotiated with the carrier. And then your rate is determined by the coverages on the home itself. Okay? So, and when I speak about, like, the coverages on the home, I'm talking the dollar amount of coverage. So if we put $88 a square foot to get your replacement cost, okay? And you're going to be rated based on that dollar amount, not just the exposure of the home, and your loss is not going to increase this. Now, there's a possibility that you may have to go on to a different type of policy within the program because they have multiple policies going at all times, and some accept, you know, the different wiring as long as it's, you know, meets their requirements, or if it's a 3.5-story building, because some programs will only go up to 3 stories. Those items are all factored in there.
Quick question. You said $88 for replacement cost. Mm-hmm. Is there a cap on, with most of your carriers, on the amount of square they would pay per square foot for replacement cost?
It's not based on per square foot. That's just the way, one of the way that the program over here rates. The cap is going to be the true replacement cost of a policy if you do that. So let's say you purchase a true 100% replacement cost policy.
Okay. You can't really get.
It's very, it's difficult because, you know, as homes get older, your replacement cost goes up. That's one of the reasons, you know, that insurance has gone up over the last 18 months is because of the pandemic. People don't realize that the rate of insurance went up because of the pandemic, because all the material shortages. So a house that you could build in 2018 for X, when you build it in 2021, it's Y. Yes, ma'am.
I have a property that I made into a duplex.
Okay.
One side is rental, mm-hmm. The other side is Airbnb.
Okay.
What kind of insurance do I need for that? Because I think you have to have different.
I would rate it as, if I were to rate it within the program here, I'd rate it. Okay, I'll repeat the question. She has a property that's a duplex, and she split it. One side is a long-term rental, and the other side is a short-term or Airbnb setup. You know, maybe not Airbnb, but whatever the case is. And she was asking, what type of insurance could she use for that, or should she use? Now, with my REI Insure Pro program, it doesn't change the rate. I just have to explain that it has short-term rental basis in there. So we would do it in that manner. It would still be considered a two-family rental. And then your only drawback would be figuring out your loss of rents amount if you wanted coverage for that. Because obviously if you're getting $1,000 for this side, but then, you know, you're receiving $500 weekly on this one, you want to try and factor out what 6 months loss of rent might benefit you. Yes, ma'am.
I have Airbnb. I can work from anywhere, so mm-hmm. Airbnb is that I rent out. And
yeah.
I also use the personal.
Okay.
And I've been finding that's hard with.
Yes.
Insurance.
Yeah, that one it's a harder one to do, because of the particular exposure. Most of the time, a rental isn't going to be set up for a homeowner situation. Do you own them in your personal name or in an LLC?
These are both going to be my personal name.
Okay. That's going to be a little harder because it's not necessarily a secondary residence. Uh-huh. And you're running it out as Airbnb. So you would probably want to insure it as a short-term rental. And if you have, you know, incidental usage where you're there for, you know, 5 days or something of that sort, you may be able to do so. But if you go there for a month at a time, that's going to be a really unique situation. I'm sure I could find something, but off the top of my head, no, I don't have that answer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I go to my Airbnb twice a year. It's in Vermont. I live in Fort Worth,
okay.
Texas. I go and I stay a week to mm-hmm. summerize and winterize.
Sure, and that's incidental occupancy. That's okay.
Okay. I go for like a long summer.
Why? Yeah. Duplex where I both sides are short-term rental,
yeah.
Except for when I'm in Ohio, I box out 4 to 8 weeks where I stay in the one side and the other side still a short-term rental.
Yeah. Now, do you own that property in your personal name or do you own it in an LLC?
LLC.
Well, an LLC can't occupy a space, so technically you're not doing anything wrong. That's one of the items that you like. That's why we have people. I'll have people say, "Well, I bought this property in my LLC, but I live in the unit." All right. Well, here's how we do this: we write a dwelling and fire policy in the LLC name, and then we write you a contents policy for your personal belongings in the home, because the LLC cannot actually occupy a space.
So I can get insurance on that duplex?
You should be able to get insurance on there. There wouldn't be anything excluded. You definitely want to make sure that you notify people of the occupancy, of course, you know, that you do go there for 4 weeks or things like that, sir. My aunt and uncle have a place in Arizona, and up until my uncle passing in November, they went every winter for 6 months, but the facility that owned the place would rent it out the rest of the time for them. But they had it as a secondary residence because they were occupying it at 6 months at a time. So it was definitely there.
In that case, like every time they go down, you have to let the insurance company know, hey, it's going to be me for the next
month? No, because it was specifically set up for that when they purchased it. It was, you know, it was part of a timeshare. So my time in the room is up. I will be at my table to answer any further questions. I do appreciate you guys attending. I hope I, you know, at least helped inform some things and wasn't just